Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a veteran CIA officer who served in the Middle East, Robert Baer, and discuss the endgame of the Syrian civil war that is likely to intensify, as well as comment on the revival of the issue of the use of torture depicted in the new movie Zero Dark Thirty. We'll also examine the real reasons behind General Petraeus' ignominious departure as head of the CIA in what amounts to a bloodless political assassination. Then we'll continue our examination of the Syrian tragedy as not just lives, but a country is being destroyed, with Charles Glass, who was ABC News' chief Middle East correspondent and is the author of Tribes and Flags, Adventure and Kidnap in Greater Syria. We will discuss his article at the New York Review of Books, Aleppo, How Syria is Being Destroyed. Then finally, in the aftermath of the worst mass killing in America since the Virginia Tech massacre, we will speak with Colin Goddard, who was shot four times and was one out of seven of a class of 17 to survive the Virginia Tech shooting, with three of the four bullets still in his body. With calls to revive the assault weapons ban, we will discuss the NRA's continuing role in preventing law enforcement authorities from correlating data on those with mental illness and those who are able to purchase military-style firearms. And joining us now is Robert Baer, a veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle Eastern countries, including Iraq, Lebanon, and Syria. He's the author of three New York Times bestsellers, See No Evil, which was made into the movie Syriana, Sleeping with the Devil, and The Devil We Know, Dealing with a New Iranian Superpower. His latest book, co-written with his wife Dana, is The Company We Keep, a husband and wife true life spy story. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Baer.
Hi, Ian. It's great to be back.
And do you think the end game is happening in Syria? Even the Russians, the Deputy Foreign Minister of Russia the other day suggested that the rebels are probably going to win, and they're calling on Russians to start to evacuate. So do you think that the end is near?
I think we got a ways to go. I keep in touch with the Alawites in the regime. They don't intend to give up. This conflict is so misunderstood in this country. For a start, Bashar al-Assad, the president, could leave today and it would continue. What we're faced with is an army, elite units, which are doing most of the fighting, the 4th Division, who are commanded by Alawites. A lot of the soldiers are Christians. They are a beleaguered minority. They think that if the rebels take over, that they will be slaughtered. They think their backs are the wall. This is not a case of a dictatorship, of one man having gone crazy. It's not the way the country works. It's generals from his promotion, which control the fighting, and as I said, would continue to fight on. Now, I've heard anecdotal stories. I certainly couldn't vouch for them, that some of the Alawites are going into Lebanon, moving north, and going up to what's called the Alawite Mountains above Latakia on the Mediterranean. That's where they're traditionally from. You know, is there going to be some huge resettlement at some point? I don't know. What I can tell you is that if these people get desperate enough, and they do think they're going to die, the Alawites, they will use whatever weapons they have to fight back.
Well, of course, the issue over chemical weapons came up recently. A lot of the reports of the imminent use of chemical weapons, I think, were coming from Israel. The Secretary of Defense suggested that they were a little bit overwrought. But at the end of the day, you think that could be the issue, the chemical arsenal?
I think absolutely. I mean, look, you know, we don't know who's going to take over Syria for a start. Is it some sort of al-Qaeda-like organization, the same sort of people that attacked our consulate in Benghazi? Is it going to be moderate? Is it going to be secular? We just don't know. It's impossible to find out who's doing the actual fighting and which way the power, and the balance of power has shifted. It could be to the Alawite. I mean, it could be to fundamentalists. It could be, we just don't know. So there's that question, who's going to get the sarin at the end of the day? And there's also VX, extremely potent chemical weapons. They're binary. And we also don't know, you know, if the Al Whites hold on to them, will they use them? And, you know, it's a guess. My call is they probably would, to cover the retreats, to, you know, or some general would lose his mind and fire these things. So I'm not sure that, you know, any sign that these weapons are being pulled out of garrison are being mixed is really, we're up at, you know, the boiling point where this is going to really cause problems in the region.
So Robert Baer, again, a veteran CIA operations officer, served in various Middle East countries, including Iraq, Lebanon, and Syria, the author of three New York Times bestsellers. The head of Hezbollah, Sheikh Nasrallah, has gone public in saying that the rebels aren't going to win, and apparently Hezbollah is sending forces in, and apparently the Iranians are sending arms in around the clock, and the Quds forces, etc. So is that rhetoric or is that reality? Would Hezbollah and Iran be able to tip the balance if they, I mean, it seems like the Iranians are making a serious investment and are pouring reinforcements in.
Well, no. I mean, they can't, the Iranians can't fight in Syria. I mean, you're not going to see the Quds force, which is fairly small, setting up in cities to fight street for this regime. That would worsen the conflict because the Iranians are generally detested in Syria, and they're detested by the rebels and the Sunni fundamentalists and by the Kurds. Hezbollah is much too small to go in and fight street by street. It's never fought street by street. It's a guerrilla force that operates out of caves in southern Lebanon. It did very well against the Israelis in 2006. But they're in no way what we would consider a conventional army. You know, they can do small things like help with intercepting communications or, you know, that. But it's not going to sway the outcome of this war in by no means.
But so just to wrap up on Syria then, Robert Baer, the end is not that near. The Alawites still have enormous resources. They believe, and I think the evidence is mounting, that they will be slaughtered. I saw, just anecdotally, I saw an interview with a member of the Free Syrian Army saying he just wanted to kill them all. Made no bones about it.
Well, Ian, you have to look at the way the rebels look at it is they are heretics. And in Islam, you cannot, heretics are to be put to the sword. And these people, the Alawites, believe in the Trinity, which is completely contrary to traditional Islam. And so if you go by the Quran, they would be justified in putting them, you know, of slaughtering them. You know, it's an unpleasant truth, but true.
Well, when the U.S. bans it, one of the rebel groups, Al-Nusra it's called, and another rebel group apparently also that's involved in some of the recent fighting that involved the Palestinian refugee camp, who finances them? We hear that money comes from Qatar and from Saudi. Is this individuals that's financing the fundamentalist rebels, or is it official policy?
No, it's official policy. You got this coming out of the Emirates. You've got money coming out of Saudi Arabia and Qatar, as they've always done, as they did in Afghanistan in the 80s. They give money to the Salafis who live in the Gulf. I mean, the people can get a hold of the arms or the people willing to go fight. Because none of these countries have what we would consider, you know, effective intelligence services where they're putting people on the ground and sorting out who is who. No, this has all been outsourced. Libya was outsourced to the Salafis. Syria is being outsourced to the Salafis. You've got in Turkey, you've got a group that's sympathetic to the Muslim Brotherhood / Salafis. I mean, it's a continuum. It's hard to say who stands exactly where, but ultimately the Gulf states don't have much control of who ends up with the arms. All they want to know is that they're fighting, it's not such a cold war, but they're fighting a war against Iran. And if the regime in Damascus is close to Tehran, they will do everything they can to bring it down. And it's just the nature of the conflict and see what happens afterwards.
But is that to say that the Saudis and the Qataris want a theocracy, a very, very fundamentalist, xenophobic theocracy influenced by Al-Qaeda on the Mediterranean?
It's more complicated than that. What they want is a theocracy in Libya and Syria and the other countries, but not in their own country. You're trying to keep the crazies at bay, the Salafis, and what they figure out, what they believe, is if they send them to places like Afghanistan and Pakistan and, you know, Tunisia and everywhere else this is going on, they won't be threatening their rule. This is, for them, it's a question of survival. Keep in mind that the Salafis are only 10%, you know, of maybe it's that much of the population of these countries, yet they fight about their weight, just as the communists did in 1917 in Russia. Mm-hmm. They were a small minority, but they were determined, and they're armed.
But it does feel like it's the Saudi foreign policy to spread Salafism and fundamentalism. That's what they did in Egypt. They financed the Salafists, who surprised everybody, and were the second biggest bloc in the new parliament.
Oh, I think it's out of their hands. But all these people are thinking in terms of survival. If they can appease the Salafis in their own country by sending them abroad, it works for them. Mm-hmm. It gives them a couple extra years.
You're talking about the House of Saud. The
House of Saud. Everything they do is based on survival.
Right.
Whether it's allying with the United States, whether it's setting up secret channels with Israel, whether it's funding Sunni fundamentalists in Iraq to fight the Iranians, it's all about survival. On one side you have Iran, on the other side is you have the Wahhabis or the Salafis or whatever you want to call them, and they're in between. They do not have some evil intention to recreate the caliphate. I think there's just no evidence for it. And they're just much more pragmatic than that. Well, you say it's ultimately destructive, and I agree it's destructive.
Right. Well, they're sitting on tons of money. That's what it comes down to, right?
They're everything is outsourced.
Right.
Everything. They won't fight themselves. You won't see a Saudi prince fighting in Syria.
Right.
They'll give the money to the Salafis, and off they go.
Well, Robert Baird, let's turn to another issue that I wanted to talk to you about, because we've spoken about it before, and that is that the issue of torture and the use of torture and how the use of torture may have led to the capture and killing of Osama bin Laden has been brought forth, reviving the debate through the movie Zero Dark Thirty, Catherine Bigelow's new movie, which I just saw last night. And the first third of the movie, frankly, is about torture and the early days under Cheney of them trying to break these people. And then I'd say about in the second third of the movie, they play, for example, in the background, a clip of Barack Obama on 60 Minutes condemning torture. And then the characters in the film more or less say, well, you know, at one point they will say now the detainees in Guantanamo have lawyers. So the attitude from the CIA people depicted in this movie was that their hands are being tied by Obama. So what's your sense? Because I've spoken to you about this. I've spoken to Glenn Carl, who exposed the folly of torture at the CIA and the bogus finding by John Yoo that was the basis of it. And also I've spoken to Ali Soufran from the FBI, who also exposed the folly and failure of torture. So what's your take on this issue coming back via this movie?
Well, let's put it this way. Catherine Bigelow is a very good filmmaker, and she needed to up this story. It couldn't be one rescue mission. The SEALs going into Abbottabad. She needed to turn this into a dramatic representation. And in the course of that, she completely misrepresented the truth. There is absolutely no evidence, none, zero, that torture contributed to finding bin Laden. The Senate this Thursday came out, announced its report that there was no evidence that torture worked. The Republicans voted against it, not because it was inaccurate. It was just on a technicality, but McCain has come out and supported it. The fact is that bin Laden found with cooperating human sources, monitoring chatter, looking at the record, analysis, and so forth. Traditional espionage. I know that the former director of operations, Jose Rodriguez, has come out and wrote a book. I know that the conservatives that say the torture works, it doesn't. I spent a lot of time talking to the SEALs about the so-called SEER course, where they're waterboarded in that. All of the psychologists that work with the SEALs and the Special Operations Command will tell you waterboarding is a way to break people. It's not a way to extract information. It's a way to take prisoners of war, force them to make statements on television, denounce the war. But it has never produced reliable intelligence. So, you know, for Catherine Bigelow to claim that this movie in any sense is a docudrama is just, it's just wrong. It's absolutely wrong. I've spent a lot of time looking at this. I doubted it at the beginning because I looked at Middle East services, the torture. They always had the worst intelligence. So did the Chinese because they just got false leads. And I think this movie does a disservice because next time we have an attack on this country, people are going to remember the movie just as they remembered Oliver Stone's JFK, the Kennedy conspiracy. You know, was behind this, you know, was due to this, you know, conspiracy and assassination. It's just wrong. We cannot get our truths from Hollywood. Catherine Bigelow's movie, The Hurt Locker, was brilliant, but anybody who's dealt with DOD teams knows it was complete Hollywood fantasy. Not the way it works. Good movie, no truth.
Well, you know, she's a friend of mine, so I'm not comfortable in a sense.
Well, yeah.
But let me just add that she was given access to the actual woman who's the main character, played by Jessica Chastain. This apparently this fairly feisty and irreverent woman in the CIA who is given credit for being the main Bin Laden hunter, and they were given access to her. So obviously, to some extent, it's this woman's story. That's what she told them, isn't it?
Yeah, but don't forget that this woman was the same woman who prevented the FBI from getting the memo about the two 9/11 hijackers down in San Diego. I mean, it's a complicated story. She would not allow the FBI to be told about Khalid Mihdhar down in San Diego. She is feisty. She did learn. She's also the one that was behind the mistaken kidnapping of a German, Khaled Masri, who turned out to be completely innocent. He was tortured. So this is much more complicated. And, plus the CIA simply cannot sit down and tell Catherine Bigelow how Bin Laden was caught. So, I was involved in a movie with Hollywood too, Syriana. There's just very little truth to the whole movie. It was not a docudrama. I mean, you know, and I went along with it because it was good entertainment. What do I know about entertainment? I just know that if I had written the script, it wouldn't have been never made. So, you know, script writers, you can't expect them. So what all they do is they get into a narrative, they find out what the dramatic turning points are that are important for the movie, and they put it in the movie as they rightly should. But what you can't do is come out and say that this is the way Bin Laden was caught, because it's not true. I don't care what the CIA said, and I don't care what the director of operations said who supported torture. It doesn't work, and it didn't in this case. Go with the Senate findings.
Well, Bob Baer, when you tell us, which I didn't know, that the woman in the CIA who's the main character that the movie's based on, the new movie by Catherine Bigelow, Zero Dark Thirty, that she was responsible for preventing the FBI from finding out about these two 9/11 hijackers down in San Diego. So does that to say that this woman is trying to atone for that enormous failure? Because that was obviously an opportunity to prevent 9/11.
No, I don't think it's a question of that. It's a question there's a learning curve. The CIA was asked to go from a fairly passive collection intelligence service to an active one. You know, in the 90s, yeah, fine, the blinking red light, the tenant talked about, you know, they were coming our way. That was not actionable intelligence. You know, tracing Khalid Mihdhar and not having turning the FBI loose on him was a judgment call. And you know, in light of 9/11, it was a bad one. But they're all bad when things go wrong. What happened with this woman, as I understand, is that she went through a learning curve. I've been through them myself. Where you start out completely ignorant of a subject, something terrible happens, and yes, you do sit down and you become obsessed with taking every bit of information from wherever you can get and trying to combine it. Now, exactly what she did to find bin Laden, I don't know. But, you know, you look at the press reporting, and it's impressive. And she is abrasive, which isn't allowed for women in the CIA. Men can be abrasive, and they usually are. You know, it's a two-tier standard. And, you know, this pain of 9/11 certainly focused her attention. And in that sense, she's heroic. But what I think would still comes back to torture. There is an official record. Every document has been gone through related to the hostile interrogations of these people. And it never at any point did one interrogation where waterboarding or any other abusive methods were used produced a piece of information which proved key to locating bin Laden.
Well, Robert Baer, again, veteran CIA operations officer, served in various Middle East countries, including Iraq, Lebanon, and Syria, and the author of three New York Times bestsellers. Just another touch on a quick subject, if I can. We're going to play the tape of the solicitation of General Petraeus by Fox News. An emissary was sent over to Kabul just before Petraeus took the CIA job. And she, K.T. McFarland, operating as an emissary of the head of Fox News, Roger Ailes, offers Petraeus the presidency. Essentially, all he has to do is sign on the dotted line. Roger Ailes will take leave from Fox News, run the campaign. She says, you know, it'll be an inside job. You'll have Fox News on your side. And Rupert Murdoch will finance the whole thing. Bob Woodward of the Washington Post released this tape. I don't know how he got hold of it or who recorded it. But my assumption would be that President Obama would have heard this tape or heard about this tape, would he not? And that the very fact that Fox and Murdoch and Ailes are trying to recruit Petraeus to run for president against him, either in 2012 or later in 2016, surely would have gotten the president's attention. And perhaps that's why he put him at CIA, was to get him off the street.
Oh, I think no doubt. You know, get him out of the field. I think he was a threat. I think Petraeus, my opinion, my humble opinion, is would have made a better candidate than Romney. He certainly had more political sense than Romney did. He's a four-star general. He extracted us from Iraq. He was part of the surge in Afghanistan. And we're all looking for heroes. He's very presentable. I think no doubt that's why Obama put him at the CIA, wanted to keep him in the tent. Petraeus doesn't have American political sense. You know, that I'm true, you know, Congress and in the sense of Washington, he probably is, you know, insecure himself about running for president. What does he know about that? With or without Fox. You know, he probably looked at it. This is sheer speculation. It's 2016. He spent 3 or 4 years at the CIA. This guy gets out. I got a shot then. He needed a civilian job to really begin to understand Washington. Now, what I heard, and I keep on hearing this repeatedly, and this is sheer, not sheer speculation, but informed speculation, that Petraeus, look, I what I can tell you is the FBI does not go after a CIA director for adultery or strange IP addresses or we're having an affair with an author, especially an officer, a reserve officer in the American military. They just don't care. You can barely get them. They're so busy to follow up terrorist leads. So they wouldn't go after this. So I take that fact and the fact that I've heard over and over again that it was people at the CIA were aware of this affair. They didn't like Petraeus. He brought this military mentality. He was arrogant. You know, he would order pineapple, on his trips, 2 pounds of it, cord not sliced, extra tomatoes for his runs, water bottles. And not only that, he was, I've heard from CIA people that he was messing with the finished product, National Intelligence Estimate. He considered himself a bit of a wordsmith. He liked to change things. He liked to, I presume redo assessments on Afghanistan. And so the FBI and senior CIA officers got together. You know, how they actually did it, I don't know.
But it was an inside job.
And, of course, the White House knew about this from the beginning.
But in short, it was an inside job that they decided to get rid of this guy from within.
This wasn't White House dirty work. This is just CIA. CIA people do tend to reject outsiders who cause waves. I've seen it over and over. They did it with John Deutsch, a CIA director under Bill Clinton. He'd take his computer home. Same thing happened. They sort of destroyed his reputation because he was arrogant.
Well, you've left us with quite a lot to think about here, Robert Baird. I thank you very, very much for joining us here today.
I left you a lot of speculation. But anyhow, there you go.
Informed speculation. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Again, I've been speaking with Robert Baer, who's a veteran CIA operations officer who served in various Middle East countries, including Iraq and Lebanon and Syria. He's the author of 3 New York Times bestsellers, See No Evil, which was made into the movie Syriana, Sleeping with the Devil, and The Devil We Know, Dealing with the New Iranian Superpower. His latest book, co-written with his wife Dana, is The Company We Keep, A Husband and Wife True Life Spy Story. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking further about the Syrian tragedy.